Welcome to the Sum of It All podcast with season 12. I'm Audrey Mendeville, along with my colleague Mark Alcorn from the San Diego County Office of Education, and we're excited to launch season 12 with you. This season, we are diving into the book Unlearning, Changing Your Beliefs and Your Classroom with UDL by Allison Posey and Katie Novak. Just as in our previous seasons, Mark and I will chat about one chapter of the book in each episode and invite you to listen in as you read along with us. Whether you've read it already or plan to read it soon, we are so glad that you've joined us for this episode, where we'll explore the introduction. Transcripts to our podcast are always available for you in the episode notes on your favorite platform. So a new book and a new introduction, which is not an introduction because not everyone reads those according to our authors.
Right.
But the very first page has two scenarios that I thought might be fun for us to start kind of this episode with. And the first says, just consider all the many innovations that have been introduced to you in your career as a teacher, the strategies, the frameworks, all of those things. How many of those actually transformed your teaching practice?
Wow. let me think for a second. That's a lot of reflecting. But you know, when I that really jumped out at me too, that phrase, that whole question there. And you know, in the many innovations that have been introduced during my teaching career, you know, like the strategies, the frameworks, Audrey, one thing I think of when I think of all that is the big binders.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean by big binders? I think if you go to any educator and say, what do you think of when you think of big binder? I mean, their head goes straight to if they're a teacher, their classroom, and there's a particular cupboard where they store all past professional learning big binders. And I know when it came time to move to a different school, I just probably half of my boxes that I was moving to the new school were the big binders that I just sort of mindlessly moved from this shelf, from this school to the new shelf and the new school. And most of the time, I don't think I thought about whether I needed this collection of past learning. I think subconsciously thought that I need to bring it with me just in case I need to refer back to it. So I love the idea of this book. You know, how do we take the time as educators to reflect back on the cumulative effect of all the learning experiences, good and bad, that have all like led us to teaching a certain way in this moment?
That's such an interesting thing to talk about, those binders, Mark. We're probably dating ourselves, number one. It's like, I imagine I'm hopeful,
that's
like
true.
Number one, that like our new teachers, maybe in the last 5 years,
they're
are
like, what binders?
What are you talking about?
True.
Those
Good
three
point.
Inch, 5 inch binders, I moved them from school to school like you. I even moved them into the county office, so many of them. And it wasn't until
good point.
Maybe even right before the pandemic. And definitely I had a couple still lingering after the pandemic when we went back to the offices, that I finally looked at and I was like, what am I still doing with these? You know, like you look at the pages inside and it, you know, some of them jog your brain about things that you're like, oh yeah, I remember when I learned that, or, you know, but like if that practice is not embedded in how you do things now, if that knowledge is not inside your brain at this point, like it's not going to make it. Having it in a binder on your shelf does not mean that it's going to be a transformative teaching practice, right? Like it doesn't just magically get there because the binder's on your shelf, right?
Yeah, good points, Audrey. And you know, there's only so much stuff that we can hold in our heads even that become part of our practice. You know, if we go through those binders, how many of the things actually ended up being part of our practice? And you know, in our role, if we keep adding and adding for teachers, like, and I think we have to make some space to subtract some stuff. There's only so much stuff that can become of part of your current practice. You know, there's stuff that doesn't make sense anymore, but there's probably also stuff that never made sense in the first place.
Yeah, those are really good points. So whether it's finally recycling the binder or maybe thinking through some of those practices, I love that, that idea, you know, we do on occasion called the stop pause go chart. Like, what are the things I need to stop doing? What are the things I need to pause and reconsider? And what are the things I'm definitely going to keep doing? And what you're talking about there, Mark, really reminds me of that. And I really appreciate that sentiment. So the second thing that comes out early in the chapter is around boredom, which I'd like to hear your take on too. And the question the authors posit with this is, they say, what would it take to change our practices so that we are able to reach and engage every student? How long would something like that take? And how much would we have to change?
Yeah, I really like this set of questions. You know, that first question, this idea of the goal being to reach and engage students, I really love that as a frame. Instead of the first question being, how do we raise test scores? You know, that the other question is much more important to get to that other end in mind. Mm-hmm. And then the assumption, the other part I like about that question is the assumption that we as educators might need to fix something in ourselves, in our practice, versus identifying the students, our students being the problem that needs to be fixed. And then lastly, that's that question about how much would we need to change? Wow. How much stuff in those big binders is stuff I need to change because it's seeped into my practice? As educators, like, what gives us the will to change a practice that we have engaged in for many years?
Yeah, those are great points, Mark. And, you know, when the authors take much of that work and they're kind of talking through it, they share that, like, that our challenge was that the transformation, this is a quote from them, would mean letting go of most of what we had learned about how to teach. And again, most teachers, including us, have a hard time integrating new learning. And I think it's because of that, like this idea of letting go of something and the change that is a result of that, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I have to be honest though, Audrey, when I saw the word most, let go of most of what we've learned as educators, it did seem like a lot, the word most. And I was curious how our authors quantified this, you know, going back to our default of thinking about mathematics and how that might be quantified. If I have to let go of most, do I need to let go of most? But I appreciate the push, and it's got me thinking.
Yeah. So they enter from there into a discussion around unlearning, and they say we have to unlearn, which is this idea of this change of letting go of some things, but not only just letting go and recycling the binders, but learning to do something different. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, this is huge because the idea of pressing pause and doing a 180 and going a different direction away from something is pretty powerful. I think of like my years of education, the countless learning experiences that I've engaged in that form me as an educator of who I am today. Like, what should I let go of? Not just let go of the binder, but actually stop doing something and go the opposite direction. So I also got this connection to, you know, the book that we read together by Adam Grant called Think Again. That book was a really an eye-opener for me to consider what things prevent me from pressing pause and thinking again about something. In this case, thinking about my practice. How could that play out, right?
Yeah. So that's a great question, Mark. And that book, the Think Again book, has been something that I think has really pushed us to really push pause and consider this idea of unlearning. Again, not most, but with like the new things that show up. But they present an idea based on a historical tale, I'll say at best, around scurvy and the need for 3 teaspoons of lemon juice. And I won't go into it. It's worth reading. It was fun to read. Sure, these authors have a great tone in how they present stories. But the notion here is that it was the solution to a problem was something that everyone had access to, but not everyone thought was a worthy idea. Mm. And I think that's a really interesting space to think about in terms of education and how many of the solutions might actually be something that we have access to, but we don't think is a worthy idea. And it makes me kind of wonder why. Like, why don't we think it's a worthy idea? Is it that we've tried too many things that haven't transformed our practice? You know, like when you talk about those binders, I mean, each one of those came with promises that this was going to be the thing, right? And in some cases, it made some changes, but not all of them were transformative, right? And I, you know, and some of them have to do, I think, a little bit more with the second question, which you were starting to get at, which is that some of this takes time. Like, this is not an easy fix. This isn't something around like, if you just slap this on top, you know, it's going to be easy. And I think that's where maybe the analogy loses a little bit of its hold. Like, taking 3 teaspoons of lemon juice is a very quick fix to a big problem, right?
Very tangible.
And yet there's nothing in education that can be swallowed as 3 teaspoons of lemon juice and magically make the ills of what's going on disappear. So I'm curious about that a little bit.
Yeah, wonderful points, Audrey. and you're making me think about, like, how do we even be objective in making decisions of what things we should unlearn? As educators, I mean, I'll speak for myself, we often keep what we are most comfortable with. I mean, think about all those professional learnings that we attended. Many times what happens, the things we walk out with are the things that we say to ourselves, yeah, I can live with that. That's something that I can take on. But like we have, you know, with the different strategies or approaches, we have our judgments of them wrapped up in the context we learned about them. Like, think about even some of our past mentors or even current mentors, those people that actually brought us those strategies, that could be wrapped up in things. The perceived success of our implementation of these strategies. There can be so many things that are just knotted up and wrapped up in this whole thing that it's going to take something to have the will to unlearn them.
Yeah, it's so true. So there's a cycle of unlearning. This is news to me. The authors present it just briefly in this chapter that we, and I seem to get the feeling like it doesn't have to go in this order. I might have misunderstood that. I think we're going to learn more as we read the book, but that you need to understand variability. You need to know the goals. You can transform the tried and true techniques. You can prioritize engagement. You could scaffold expert learning. And it sounds like that's where the book's heading, is for us to think about how we engage in this unlearning cycle, which, as you're saying, like, this isn't, it's not a snap your fingers and you've unlearned. It's a process to really change how we think about things.
Yeah, for sure. And something that caught my attention in this section was this quote that says, "We have to unravel old practices so we have the capacity to create more effective ones." And maybe at this point, Audrey, it might be helpful to just bring an example into the space here. And one of the things that I thought of as I was reading is something that's been a practice that I've watched and engaged in as an educator throughout the years and sort of looked to see how we might be reflective upon, is this idea of how we invite students into a conversation during a class discussion. And one of the things that came about was this idea of randomization, where you would call on a kid randomly, and perhaps that might be more equitable. In fact, people started using popsicle sticks, and then they were known as equity sticks, as a way to invite a student into a conversation. And as we reflect on that, we might think we're being more equitable. But are we still cold calling on kids? And cold calling might be a questionable practice for many educators. So what will cause me to think again about this practice and take the next step to unlearn it if I need to? And how many other practices like this idea of calling on kids do I have in my current repertoire? And how do I figure out which ones are the ones that I should be identifying, right?
Yeah, I appreciate that point. Are we just being equitable around cold calling on kids? Like, what are we doing here, friends? Like, I appreciate that, Mark.
Yeah, and you know, I think we look at the whole practice, right? Because I've seen a lot of variability in implementation with colleagues in using some kind of random generator during class discussions. But if we're not thoughtful about our current and past practices, some of those things that we may keep us from new practices that are more equitable, because we're sort of like, I've got my popsicle sticks. I think this is working. It's equitable. They're equity sticks. So, you know, there's these things that prevent us from moving forward. But we have to think about the impact on students always. And is it really getting to what we wanted? Is it making the discussion better? Or is it kind of dressed up as a different version of a gotcha moment to catch kids not paying attention? So I think these are the kinds of things that, I think this example gives us something for our listeners, for us to kind of start thinking about.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So something I'm curious about is maybe bringing in a math lens into some of this too. The authors talk about teaching a 5-paragraph essay at one point in this chapter, and how they thought how important it was to really teach a 5-paragraph essay in order to teach students how to write. But then they end up with an analogy when they start realizing, like, it's more about teaching writing than it is about teaching the 5 paragraphs, right? And they ask this question, they say, what if we were to think about teaching writing like cooking? It's valuable to start with a recipe or writing instruction that outlines predictable formulas, but then provides scaffolding to move students away from those templates. Great writers don't follow formulas, just as great chefs don't follow recipes. So I'm super curious, Mark, what you would say might be the math analogy here for the 5-paragraph essay. Like, what fits in there instead if we're talking math?
Yeah, great question, Audrey. As always, a lot of our ELA examples play out a little differently in mathematics, but I did think of one that that might work. This idea of, when I taught elementary school, we had a list of strategies that you might follow if you're solving a problem. So problems in context, problem solving. Up on my board, I remember what it looked like. I had a chart, and there were these steps that you should follow if you were, you know, attacking a problem. And, you know, it really, I think, is pretty similar. The goal isn't for the students to follow those steps, but to become a problem solver and be fluid in the way that they solve problems. And thinking back on that, using the example of the 5-paragraph essay, as you just mentioned, I mean, my chart might have been a little bit rigid, and I could see for some students, again, if we look at it from the student perspective, some of the students might be like, oh, Mr. Alcorn just wants me to follow these steps, and they may not have really got like what we were trying to do with that. And it could have constrained some of my students, and they weren't able to show their brilliance because they were still so busy following my rigid structure. So I don't know, Audrey, if that's a perfect example, but it's one that comes to mind.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It's something I keep thinking about. And, you know, in so many of these books, when we read a book that is not written in math context, and we try a lot to like alternate in our podcast, looking for those moments to really talk to our math leaders out there, I value it. So thanks for sharing that. There was one other quote that I thought I might ask you about too. They say we must first transform ourselves in order to transform our system. So I'm curious how that relates to what you were sharing about binders and unlearning, and even maybe what you were just sharing about problem solving strategies. What are you thinking about that?
Yeah, well, it takes me back to something I said earlier, like, are the things that stayed in my binders, were they the things that got into my practice, were they kind of an automatic habit? Were they really part of thoughtful practice? So I'm thinking about these phrases that I just cooked up in my head: automatic habit versus thoughtful practice. So I think the difference, this is my first thinking though, maybe I'll change my mind as we read the book, but I think the difference was the thoughtful practice was a result of some kind of continuous improvement that helped me make the idea my own. Like, you know what I mean? That continuous tinkering and figuring it out and really continuing just to try to make it better for my students. I think that was the difference between the automatic habit versus the thoughtful practice.
I appreciate that. Well, we're almost out of time here. Final thoughts about the introduction as we head into this book study this season?
Yeah, sure. One quote that I didn't mention that I'll mention here at the end is, I really love this just from the authors. At the top of one of the pages, about halfway through the introduction, the authors say to us, resist the temptation to throw this book out the window or against the wall. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was so honest. I mean, you know, they're writing this introduction. They're like, hey, at this point, this is where people are going to be like, really? You know, so I just thought that quote was so well placed. Isn't that like that's the time that we would stop reading or stop listening during the workshop in person? The ask just becomes too much, too unrealistic, too theoretical for me to reconsider the practical things that I do day to day that I've spent a lot of years getting these just right, you know, as an educator. Am I open to reconsider these tried and true practices, quote unquote, of mine? Do I really know that they're tried and true? Or am I willing to put everything on the table and think again?
Great question, especially with that most of what we've learned, Mark, most right? of what we learned. So thanks for that. You know, as we wrap up, I am struck by, it still is just sticking in my brain that 3 teaspoons of lemon juice took more than 200 years for people to start listening and trying it themselves. Yeah. And I think of all the lives that were lost in the interim to something that had like an easy fix, right? And right. when I compare that with something like UDL, which implementing it is not as easy as the 3 teaspoons, like just swallow this juice and you're going to be okay. It's been a known thing for decades. Okay. Like, this is not new. It's not like someone came up with this post-pandemic and decided this would be the thing to do. Like, this has been around for decades, and we're losing students daily. And and what can we do? I don't know. I look up and I'm like, is there something about this that, like, if we want to transform the system, I'm really reading into this. Like, it says, they say we have to start by transforming ourselves. So I'm holding on to that as I read this book. I'm really thinking about that deeply. Because to me, this is the moral imperative. This is the, we are not losing more kids. We can do something if we work on ourselves. So I'm excited for this read. I'm excited to learn more and thrilled to be on this book study with you.
Oh yeah. Me too, Audrey. Well, thanks for joining us for this episode. In our next episode, we will chat about Chapter 1, Apples and Buffets. Until then, what will you unlearn?